Welcome to the Dolphin Tales podcast, presented by Baptist Health. I'm your host, Scott Manzi, joined by my co-host, Pat Sitkins, a JU baseball alum and owner of Adaptive Jacks, a local full-service marketing firm. On today's episode, two more excellent conversations, one with a JU alum and one with the current Jacksonville University head coach. First up, Pat catches up with Dove Ribnick, a former men's soccer player who graduated in the class of 2003 and then went on to the world of television, most notably Nitro Circus. His involvement with that television program evolving into live-action Nitro Circus shows that have toured around the world. What an interesting guy. And Pat's chat with him is so fascinating. I know you'll enjoy it. After that, I catch up with JU men's lacrosse coach, John Galloway. Coach Galloway, when we talked, was out in Utah in the bubble. Hopefully, he and his premier lacrosse league team, the Chrome, are still active in the playoffs out there when this comes out. But it was fascinating to hear his life literally living in one of these sports bubbles, clean sites right now. And then how he has, of course, kept up with his team over these really bizarre and different last couple of months, and how he is planning a course of attack for the fall and beyond with the men's lacrosse team as well. Two great conversations, two great interviews coming up on today's episode of the Dolphin Tales podcast, presented by Baptist Health. Baptist Health is the official healthcare provider of Jacksonville University Athletics. Baptist Health, changing healthcare for good. Coming up after the break, Pat's conversation with Dove Ribnick.
To stay on top of your game, it's important to take good care of yourself. And that's exactly what Baptist Primary Care doctors specialize in, helping you know the score when it comes to your health. And with more than 1,400 physicians in our network, Baptist Primary Care is your direct link to all of Baptist Health. To establish a relationship with a Baptist Primary Care doctor near you, call 202-CARE. Baptist Health, proud to be the official healthcare provider for JU Athletics.
This is Jacksonville women's basketball head coach Darnell Haney. Shenatry Chiropractic is a proud sponsor of JU Athletics, located east of downtown in the Arlington neighborhood. Shenatry Chiropractic specializes in acupuncture for pain relief and sports performance. See how their quality chiropractic care can help you with back pain, neck pain, auto accidents, sciatica, and more. For more information about Shenatry Chiropractic, please visit chanatrydc.com. Shenatry Chiropractic.
Well, for anyone that's watching today, if you're around the university around the late 90s, early 2000s, this guest may need no introduction. It's the world famous Dove Ribnick, soccer alum and now producer of Nitro Circus. Dove, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Pat.
No problem. So let's start before we get into, the discussion around the university, what you're doing now. Why don't you tell people a little bit about what Nitro Circus is, just for those who don't know?
Yeah, Nitro Circus, it's kind of an action sports, sort of as an action sports and DVD series. Basically, a group of friends started filming these DVDs, and over the course of many years grew into a TV show on MTV and a movie, and then a live tour where we tour the world, performing live shows. But, at the core, it's a group of friends who share the love of having fun and pushing the limits in the sports, that they participate in, which is all action sports based around, motorsports and just kind of anything with wheels. So it's just a group of friends who just have a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, we'll talk more about that. But I guess, since it's a JU show, we'll talk a little bit about the university first. Yeah. So, like I said, soccer alum. And I know you're from the Boston area up northeast. So why don't you talk a little bit about just discovering the university and why you chose to go to JU?
Yeah, it was a long, long time ago. So I'm a little hazy. But, coming out of high school, I wasn't recruited too heavily to play soccer. I think I walked on at JU. I'd talked to them before. But it was just one of the schools that had caught my eye just because I wanted to get out of the Northeast and I wanted to to get down south and be near water. And there's a few schools that I talked to that I could have walked on to, and Jay chose JU, and it couldn't have been a better fit. Like, it was just, got to play soccer, got to be in warm weather, got to be near the water, kind of ticked all the boxes.
There you go. Well, one of the things we've had some guys that have been in our era on, obviously Brian Williams, which again, beat up, it's hard to say Brian Williams, but we'll say it. You know, we've had people on from our era, and you know, one of the things we've talked about is the family mentality that happens in the athletic department. So it's not, you know, people sitting in these silos where, you know, baseball only talks to baseball, soccer only hangs out with soccer. It was really kind of that cross-pollination, if you will, where, you know, everyone kind of supported each other and we'd go to different games. And you were certainly part of that for me when I first got there, you know, being friends with a lot of the guys that were upperclassmen. So we got to spend a lot of time together. And, you know, when you think about the university as a whole and being on, you know, a smaller campus, what are some of the things that you liked about, you know, having more of that intimate setting?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the beauty of it right there is how small it is. You know, you have your friends that go to big schools, and, you know, I just don't think they got the same experience that we did. Like you said, it was a very inclusive setting with all different sports kind of befriending each other. I'm still great friends with other people I, you know, didn't play soccer with today. And I just was drawn to that and just grew to love it, like, over the, I think, 5 years I was there. Pre-med. I just loved it. Like, it was a great environment to grow in. You know, when you're 18, 19, 20, it was just that small environment, having that, you know, small knit community, like you said, I just found it perfect for me. It was ideal.
There you go. Well, you and I are the same. We both took 5 years to get through, and I think we loved the university so much, we just had to stick around as long as we could. I think Van Wilder, the movie, was actually, you know, based on you and me, whoever that guy was at Florida State, it was actually us, probably.
Yeah, a lot of similarities, yeah.
Yeah, obviously. So let's talk about the transition. I know you didn't just, you know, graduate and all of a sudden jump into Nitro Circus. So I know that you started doing things in film communications kind of right off the bat. So why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, graduating, figuring out, okay, now what do I do, up to where you are now?
Yeah, I mean, so coming out of JU, you know, I think one of the great things about JU is it does get you ready. It got me ready for the outside world. And I think, you know, I decided to stay in Florida and was lucky enough to get a job through a guy I met playing soccer, Alex Boylan, who you should have on here someday. Got me a job at a production company in Jacksonville called Pine Ridge Film and Television, doing sales for their stock footage library. I knew nothing about TV. I knew nothing about sales. I knew nothing about stock footage. I knew nothing about libraries.
Perfect.
But I knew AB who got me the job, and also he got me the job through the CFO. There was a guy called Johnny Howard who played baseball at JU as well. So again, it kind of all ties back, and kind of being there quickly, you know, over the span of a few months, I realized this is something I really was into and kind of fell in love with production. And over the course, I think I worked there for about 5 years, worked my way up from just being, you know, below a PA to a PA, which is a production assistant, to an associate producer, to a writer, to a field producer. And eventually, you know, by the time I left, I was traveling around the world to these guys, producing shows all over South America and Europe. And just, it was just the best experience ever. And that's really what kind of set me on my path in the entertainment world, was working with those guys, you know, especially Jerry and Cindy Smith, the two owners of the company, and just, you know, using every second I had with them to kind of sponge up all the knowledge they had. And like, they were just so good about teaching me, because again, I was a kid that just didn't know anything about production or libraries or TV or anything. And I wanted to learn, and they saw that, you know, I had the hunger to learn about their industry, and they really, you know, went above and beyond in teaching me.
That's awesome. So yeah. At what point did you transition out of that? And, you know, I know, like you said, you were here for a while, and then, you know, honestly, I don't really know the path from there, but I know you left, and I know you spent time overseas, and, you know, from afar, you know, I've seen you at some weddings and things like that. But as far as, you know, how did that turn into traveling all over the place and doing things on such a large scale?
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's kind of like, so I finished, I think I was there about 5 years, and just kind of was at that level where I was like, all right, I kind of wanted to keep progressing in TV and production. And, you know, I think it's no surprise that Jacksonville's not the, you know, the media hub. of the world. So I'd said, you know, I'm going to pack up my bags. I'm going to go to LA. I'm going to give it a shot. Like, this is, you know, I'm young. This is my chance. I'm going to go and try to become a producer out in LA. So I like literally packed up my car and lived in my car, the same car I still have now. Drove out to LA, was living in my car and was taking interviews to try and get jobs. I was, you know, occasionally sleeping on friends' floors, but for lack of a better term, I was living in my car for a few weeks. And I think my second interview was with Nitro Circus, and it was with a guy called Trip Taylor, who is still a very close friend of mine. And they had just started this show called Nitro Circus on MTV. They just started filming, went in for an interview. They didn't need anyone. I just, you know, we just chatted, wrapped out. He's actually from my hometown up in Cape Cod. So we kind of, you know, wrapped over that for a while. And he's like, hey, if something comes up, I'll let you know. The next day, he's like, how soon can you start? We need a position filled. And I just said, I'm living in my car. I could be there in 5 minutes. Literally drove across the valley, got there and started working. And it was just like, it was kind of like, it's very different than being at Pine Ridge and at JU, but it was just like such a natural fit. Like I just felt at home with those guys. And we were working out of the Dick House office, which is the Jackass guys. They were still doing Jackass stuff on one floor. Nitro floor was the other one. And, you know, I felt kind of just at home there. Like it was just the environment of like, they're so welcoming and inclusive, and yeah, they screwed around a lot and there's a lot of pranks happening, a lot of practical jokes, as you can imagine working in the Jackass office, but they also just appreciate people who worked hard. And like, that was kind of my mentality at JU and at Pine Ridge. And especially there was like, if I'm the hardest working person in the room, someone's going to take notice. And they did. And I started pretty low there. I kind of took a step back, but there's a foot in the door. And after the first season, I just said, hey, I'm anything I can do to move up. And they did, they offered me a field producing job and that worked. And then, so we did two seasons of MTV, kind of rambling here. We did two seasons of MTV, and at the after party for season two, I think it was at X Games, we had the after party at some bar. And, I was the first one to the after party, first one at the bar.
And I'm shocked.
And this Australian guy comes up to me and we just start bullshit. And, we were chatting and we'd all hear these rumors about Nitro starting this live tour. Like they were going to take what they had been doing for 10 years and starting this live tour. So I met this guy, and then, you know, come to find out by the end of the night, he is the guy who's the producer and promoter of this live tour. He basically bought the rights to it. And he was in LA to kind of finish the deal, but also try and find kind of like a stunt coordinator, producer, kind of a creative director for the show. And he and I just met at the bar, and he's like, at the end of the night, he's like, I need you to come to Australia tomorrow. I was like, I can't go tomorrow, but I can go and later maybe. And then we ended up talking like the next day, and he's like, no, this is real. I want to offer you this job over here. So I, you know, obviously had to go back to the Jackass guys and Trip and say, hey man, I got this opportunity. You know, are you guys cool? And like, they were about to start filming Jackass 3D, which I believe I would have had a position on that. So it was kind of like, what do I do? And something inside me just said, dude, go to Australia. You know, I've always wanted to live overseas. I've always kind of wanted to just make a big move. And so I just went for it and just didn't know anyone there. Like, sold all my stuff, put my truck in storage and packed one suitcase in a board bag and got to Australia. Just like, screw it. Let's give it a shot. I signed a 6-month contract to start the tour, and I ended up staying there for almost 7 years.
Wow. Yeah. You were talking about the pranks. We were talking before we went live, and one of the things I remember when you first started over there was your Facebook got hacked probably once a month. and it's like, well, they've left it open again.
Yeah. No, I wasn't even leaving it open. It was just people would know your password. They would just figure it out. And they would just, yeah, it's just like a thing you do on tour. Cause like, I have an office in every building, every arena we go to, and the athletes would come in and someone would figure it out. And it got ugly, but it was all in good fun.
You need better security. All right. Yeah. Password 123 isn't going to work anymore. No. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
So talk a little bit about the live show, because I know you guys did it. How many years did the live show? You're still doing it, right?
We're still doing it. I mean,
how long is it?
Right now, in this day and age, we're not doing it. We're sure. You know, live events have got hit, you know, as hard as anyone else. So, but no, we started it in 2010, and Australia was our first one. And I can remember, like, you know, going, all right. Obviously, Nitro was pretty popular at the time. We did 11 stops in Australia. We sold out. And we're like, going in, we're like, this might not work. Like, we don't know. We've been doing TV for 10 years. How do you take, you know, stunts that work in a movie and put it into a live arena? And we were practicing in California for about 6 months, building different ramps and contraptions and trying different people out. And finally, it came time. We're like, you know, we've run out of time. Let's just give it a shot. We've done everything we can. If it works, cool. If not, it was, you know, it was a good try. And it worked really well. And people loved it. And we quickly went on to do, you know, travel all over New Zealand and Japan and China and all over Europe many times, and all over the States and Canada and South Africa. And, you know, it was funny, like after the first tour, like that really worked. Like, you think this will work a second time? We did, you know, did it again. Like, there's no way, like, we'll have 3 years in us. Like, we'll do 3 years and we'll max out and, like, no one's going to give a crap anymore. And here we are 12 years later. And, like, you know, we just sold out shows in Australia at the beginning of the year before COVID. We had a whole tour in the US. We had a, you know, a big event in Wales that all got canceled. So, like, we're still going strong and, like, we're kind of gaining momentum. I think that's a credit to us evolving and always progressing. It's, you know, one thing we've always said, if we're not progressing and getting better, then, you know, what are we doing? And we're just constantly progressing.
So with the longevity that you guys have had, I mean, is it something where you're completely reinventing the show? Is it new theatrics, new tricks? I mean, what's the pull that's keeping people coming back?
No, it's not. I mean, you can't, it's not a whole new show every time, every year, but, like, you know, it's just like little subtleties with new, you know, videos and new stunts and new ramps. Like, that's kind of one of our big selling point is we are always progressing ramps, and we're to a point now we've got these ramps that are just insanely big and they're hard to tour, and some of them can't even go indoors. But we're, you know, we're always evolving ramps. The guys are always working on new tricks. And, you know, that's a huge testament to our cast. It's like, they're never, it'd be so easy for them to go, all right, I've got my tricks, I'm done, I'm safe, I can right. do these. But they just, that's not how they are. That's not how they're wired. They're like, all right, I've done this, now I got to go bigger. And it's something in them. They have to do it. And we encourage it. And we set up places for them to train that's safe with airbags and foam pits. And yeah, so it's you know, it's a mix between new ramps and just like kind of new creative to wrap the show in, and then the guys pushing themselves into tricks and finding new talent. You know, we always working on bringing in new people.
Sure. Well, we had, I'm sure you saw it, but we put it out ahead of this and asked some people, you know, if they wanted to ask you any questions. So we're not going to do a more of a hot seat thing. And most of these, since we spent time together, we can't ask on air. Yeah. Maybe we'll do a show after the show sometime, but you know, you're talking about, you know, all the new tricks and these guys pushing the limit. One of the questions that we did have asked was, what was one of the scariest moments, that you've had on tour?
Yeah. I mean, that's, there's a few of them. I think there's a different kind of scare. There's scary when someone does get hurt. And that's like the worst part about what we do. I think, especially what I do, like I kind of, part of my role before, and I still do it to this day, as like athlete manager, I'm very close to these guys. Like, you know, like we travel the world together. We spend months at a time together. Like, I love these guys. And, you know, to see them get hurt is horrible. And, you know, I've seen some horrible things. I've seen, you know, people get paralyzed. And that's, you know, there's a couple of those that, you know, that are probably my two worst moments of my career by far, seeing guys get hurt. But I think the scariest moment, you know, besides that, because it was something that was about to happen, or did happen before it happened, we were in South Africa, and the 2 years before, my buddy Eric Rohner, who's since passed away, did a base jump off the top of the stadium into the show. And we went back and we're gonna do a tribute to him, but we're like, no, to honor him, we can't just do one person. So we got to do a tandem. So we brought this guy in from California to South Africa, and we pulled someone out of the stands and had to do a tandem base jump. That was the scariest moment, because, like, we're taking some random person, strapping them to a dude,
right,
and jump 400 feet out of this arch over the stadium in South Africa. Like, it should go good. If it doesn't, it's going to be really bad. And it's kind of my idea. And, like, I was just sitting there going, what have I done? Like, what am I doing with my life? Like, just strapping a poor lady to some dude. And, like, yeah, we're in South Africa where, like, you can do whatever you want there. But, like, I've really got to, like, see a therapist or something. Like, this isn't good. And I was just standing there just going, like, what have I done? But that, and it ended up being fine. Landed, the whole place went nuts. That kind of, the video of it, like, kind of went around the world. So it was cool. But, like, that was, like, the moment I was like, all right.
I can imagine that would be a little nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the movie, because, you know, obviously that's a whole other production. And like you said, you've had the TV show, you've got the live event. Talk to me a little bit about the movie and, you know, how that came about, and just the process, you know, kind of the differences in the process between the other two versus, you know, a full film.
The Nitro movie?
Yep.
Yeah, so truth be told, I didn't work on that one too much, to be honest.
Okay.
That was like right in the middle of all of our tours kind of kicking off, and I was really hyper-focused on the tours. I did come in and help out with, I think, a couple scenes at Trav's and that big crossover. But the movie came about because the you know, the popularity of the TV show and the tours. And, you know, the creators of Nitro, Godfrey, Jeremy, and Trev, you know, it's kind of the next step, next evolution of like, we've done TV, let's go do a movie. And they got the funding. I give those guys so much credit for just swinging for the fences. They just said, let's do it. They did it on their own. They raised their own money. They hired their own crew. You know, they didn't have a full studio behind them. And they just went for it. And, you know, I think the movie was great. It was great for our fans. It was great for the tour. It really, you know, set us up for a lot of success for years to follow. So I wasn't super involved in the pitching and selling and editing of that, again, because I was all over the place. But like,
sure,
it was a full, you know, a full blown Hollywood movie.
Right. Yeah. It's incredible to see just, you know, the evolution of, you know, you said just some buddies who, yeah, you know, like to do, you know, action sports, yeah, that's turned into just this massive brand and following. It's, yeah, just incredible to see. And like you said, to have it go on for this long is a testament to everyone that's involved. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's wild.
So I've got a few questions here that I'll throw at you, and then I want to get back a little bit to JU. So one person asked, what was the most unique location that you guys have been on?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate. I count my lucky stars all the time. I think, you know, I'm very lucky to have the most amazing fiance and daughter in the world. But then secondly, like, I've seen the world. I've traveled the world over and over. I've done it with an amazing group of people. And I've seen some unreal things. I've been in some really messed up situations. But I've also, I'd have to say, like, the most amazing, unique place. Unique, was that the question?
Yeah, unique, amazing, I think, whatever you want.
Mozambique was awesome. We were filming in South Africa, and we take this kind of like military car, we drive over the border from South Africa into Mozambique, and this like dirt road, and we're driving, and you can't get out of the car to pee because the roads, there's so many landmines in Mozambique that you just got to hold it until you get to your destination. And we kind of just come up over this hill, and we're just in this like kind of diving surfing resort overlooking this epic beach. And from there, we just did all this amazing stuff. Got great content from like darting rhinos to for research to like, you know, playing with tigers to, it's just all this amazing stuff that we just did up in that, you know, northern South Africa. But just Mozambique itself was like kind of like a pinch me moment. Like, what am I doing here? What have I gotten us into?
Awesome. Well, here's one that'll probably get edited out, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What was your favorite bar and why was it Papa Joe's? You can thank Paul Kelly for that one.
Paul, you're wrong there, my friend, because I was gonna say the Broken Spoke. Broken Spoke was my favorite bar of all time. I don't even know if it's still there. If it is, I've got no idea. I wish it was, but I don't know. No, Papa Joe's for sure. Obviously Papa Joe's.
It's been a few things since, but the building's there, but Papa Joe's is long gone now. So
gone but never forgotten.
That's right. At least in our era, for sure. So so let's go back to JU. I mean, I guess a generalized question would be, you know, what was your favorite thing about the university as a whole? I mean, I know we talked around, you know, the feel of the campus, you know, the camaraderie, things like that. But, you know, just what was the one thing that really stood out to you from your time there?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll probably be long-winded in this answer again, but like, I remember showing up there and like, again, I'm, you know, just an 18-year-old kid from Cape Cod, which is a pretty sheltered area. And I get there and my first experience is the soccer team. And like, I don't know if you remember, but like back when I started, it was 98. There was a lot of Yugoslavians, Serbians, mm-hmm, internationals on the team. And like these dudes were men. Like I got there I was a teenager, and these guys were men. I mean, back then they were more a man than I am now. And they were like these dudes were like hardened men and like serving the military in their country. Like, we still don't really know how old they were, and they're still great. Like, they were great people. Like, I learned so much from them, and I think I grew so much because I was, you know, embedded in this group of like multicultural, you know, men. There was Hope from Zimbabwe and George from Nigeria and a couple of Brazilians, and it was just like this awesome kind of melting pot that you just kind of had to grow up quickly, or else, you know, these could kick daddy on the field. But I just remember showing up and just seeing all these different types of people that I just wasn't exposed to on the Cape, just being exposed to all these, you know, different cultures, different people. And I just remember being like, this is awesome. This is like where I want to be. And like, just thinking, you know, I didn't even know that about that when I was going there. And I've just, you know, you stayed friends with these people all the way through school. And even after, I think the long-winded answer is the people. I think that's the one thing that I take away from that is, and it's not just, you know, the friends on the team, but just friends around the school, the staff, just people in North Florida in general. Like I just fell in love with Florida. You know, I stayed there for 9 years overall. And I think that's the one thing I take away from JU. And the most thing for is just the people I got to meet, interact with, and maintain friendships. That's my favorite part about JU.
That's awesome. Well, Dev, I really appreciate the time. Any plans to bring the tour to Jacksonville anytime soon?
Yeah, I can't say specifically. Obviously, you know, COVID has kind of messed some stuff up, but we did a show in Jacksonville a few years ago. It did great. I think we nearly sold out. You know, Florida's been a tough market for us, but long story long, we do have plans to bring an event to Florida, to North Florida very soon. We're in some pretty extensive talks with the government there about this new event that we're working on. So hold your breath, because it might be coming soon.
Awesome. Well, if you next time you're in town around campus, you know, either officially on official business or leisure, we'd love to have you on. We're going to bring this on campus once we're allowed back on as well. So always welcome back on the show. And I know you guys always have new stuff going on. So anything, you know, you have new coming on, anything you want to talk about? I know you did some relief work on the latest show on ESPN. So anything they're doing like that, anything you want to let current students, alumni know, we'd be happy to have you back on.
Cool. Well, when is this going to air? Can I plug something?
Go for it.
When is this going to air?
A couple weeks.
Oh, perfect. August 16th, ESPN2, the Pastrana Land Pit Bike Championships. Watch it. It's going to be awesome. We basically held this amazing race in Trav's backyard with some of the best races in the world on kids' bikes. It's great fun, and it's airing on the 16th.
There you go. Check it awesome. Out. Dove, thanks again, man. Great seeing you. Great catching up.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Take care. Thanks, bro. Bye.
Hampton Inn Oceanfront Jacksonville Beaches location is perfect for everything from a weekend getaway, a corporate conference, or even a beautiful beach wedding. Our heated lagoon-style pool with cascading waterfalls and rock grotto sets the mood for rest and relaxation. Our unique event space and full-service catering department offers everything you need for any special event. Join us at the Tides Beach Bar and Grill, where you can enjoy the ocean breeze and your favorite libation. Call the Hampton Inn Oceanfront for more details at 904-241-2311.
With over 25 years of insurance-related auto accident and personal injury experience, the law offices of George Hunter PA have the experience and knowledge when you need it most. For others, it's just business. For us, it's personal. Call us today at 1-833-221-HURT. The law offices of George Hunter PA, a proud partner of Jacksonville University Athletics. My guest on the Dolphin Tales podcast today, head men's lacrosse coach John Galloway, coming to us from Utah. I mean, not often that we're talking this far away, but you're out there for the PLL tournament going on right now. Coach, how's it going out on the other side of the United States right now?
It's going well. It's an experience, that's for sure. You know, I think we're just getting used to our surroundings and recognizing that this is the only way for live sports to be happening this summer. And I think all of us as players are just excited and thrilled that we were able to have a season. So it's been a ride. We've learned a lot. I give credit to our league and the safety procedures that they've put in place to make sure that we can get these games going. And after three rounds of testing, it's we feel as safe as we possibly could be and ready to play.
It's been fascinating just to see how professional sports have tried to navigate this throughout the course of the last several months. And for you all, you've gone for the bubble concept as well. I know it's a little bit apples to oranges here, but do you think that there's anything you've seen from the bubble concept that you think can be applied to college sports as they try to come back here starting hopefully in the fall, if not the winter?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that is unique to what we have been doing is essentially creating travel groups. And while there's always going to be cross-contamination between teams and between groups, I do think that, you know, having set groups, you know, for, let's say, you know, you translate that to college campuses, having cohorts of students going to classes together and going to the cafeteria together. And it's allowed us to kind of keep an eye on each group and what they're going through, and hopefully limit any outbreaks if there is a positive test. And I think that has been a great indicator for, you know, how quickly this thing can spread. You're seeing in the MLB right now, and hopefully we're doing a good job of making sure that if, you know, there is a case that comes out, we don't infect the entire league. And that's going to be something that I think most colleges have to take into consideration, is not if there's going to be a positive, because there's going to be, but how well you can control that.
What's been the strangest aspect to living in a bubble or a clean site?
You know, there's a lot of unique challenges. I do think that I think the natural social interaction that you have with your teammates and your players, you know, walking down the hallway wearing a mask, your natural reaction is to give a guy a hug or high five, and you're just limited to your interactions now. So that's a challenge. Beyond that, once you feel safe, once you feel contained, a lot of it does become normal. But I will say that we're just probably a product of our atmosphere, and that a lot of people, when they hear our schedule, you know, we wake up, we go downstairs, we take a health check, we grab breakfast, we come back into our room, we take team buses, we go back to the facility, we spend the day in the facility, you know, wearing masks and staying within our group. We get lunch, we get dinner in groups, and then we're back here. So it's a very regimented schedule, but you know, as soon as you get used to something new, it becomes a normal for you.
The last time we caught up was, man, months ago now, the very beginning of all this stuff happening. The season had just ended. We were talking about how you had dealt with communicating with your team about how the season wouldn't be continuing, unfortunately. That feels like it was 2-3 years ago at this point. How have you handled the last several months, staying in contact with your team, addressing those that are coming back, those that aren't coming back, and sort of the nature of just trying to stay connected through these trying times?
Yeah, and there's no perfect blueprint for what we've all been going through, and how you communicate with your players has been one of the most important aspects of our jobs. And we spent really the remainder of the spring as well as early summer having a chance to just get to know our guys on a different level. We didn't talk a lot of lacrosse. We sectioned our meetings into specific thoughts. You know, it was a little bit more team building. Some of it was just education. You know, obviously everything going on in the world provided us with our platform to educate our guys, and us as coaches aren't always prepared to provide that knowledge. So what we did was we spent a lot of time bringing other people into our Zoom calls with our team and allowing our guys to ask questions, but, you know, more so to educate themselves on everything that's going on, obviously with the social injustice in the world. Just the unfairness of what's happening in their lives. I think as 18 to 22 year olds, we would all admit that we would probably feel slighted by what's going on right now in our world. So, you know, explaining to them that this is a level playing field for all of us. And then we spent one day talking lacrosse briefly by position. And that month of May and June, I thought was some of the most informative, thoughtful, authentic meetings we've ever had as a team, even though it was virtual. And at the end of June, we decided, you know, these guys on a normal schedule would be away from us for 3 months. And we can't, just because of what's going on, we can't change their normal schedules. We have to keep it as normal as possible. So we decided to give the month of July off. You know, I think that for every student athlete, they need time to decompress. They need time away from the coaches and away from the pressures of the, you know, the grind that is Division I athletics. So we haven't talked to them, you know, again, individually, we stay in touch with them, of course, but as a team, we haven't talked to them from July 1st, and we'll resume our meetings next week. But it's been nice. It's been nice to hear from them, to hear how eager they are to be back with their teammates. All of them are just hopeful that there's some sense of normalcy in the fall. And I think that is a credit to our university and the atmosphere they've created, that people want to be back. People want to be together. People want to be back in the state of Florida as a team. And we're excited for that chance, and hopefully it comes soon enough.
Over the last several years, when you and I have talked, whether that be podcasts or what have you, you've just talked about how you always try and identify something, grow as a head coach, find a new way to get better. Have you figured out where maybe you've taken a little bit of this craziness and been able to use that in a positive for some growth?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this, again, this offseason has been more opportunity for growth than any other time before. You know, a lot of our schedules are so, you know, they're so filled with recruiting and the next step. You know, we're always looking at the next phase of our team. And this has allowed us to take a step back and reevaluate our culture, reevaluate what we're doing in our locker room, reevaluate the tone of our program. I think that that's been a big theme, even now just for me playing, kind of taking a step back and seeing where guys have the most fun, where, when it's the most stressful, when it's the most physically taxing or mentally taxing, and how can we make this more enjoyable for the guys? Because I do think that there's a mental component to everything that's going on right now. And when our guys get back, this is going to be their outlet. And, you know, we have to be really thoughtful of not jumping right back on the horse and going full speed just because we haven't been with them. You know, this is going to be an opportunity for them to get outside of their house, back with their teammates, having a chance to have that social interaction. And we have to make it really, really excited for them. And there's going to be a level of hard work that we bring with that. But in the last 3 months, I think all of us have been able to reflect and understand that, man, this should be the best part of our day, the best part of our year, you know, and when it's taken away from us, how much that hurts. And that's going to be something I think we probably emphasize a little bit more from a coaching standpoint with our guys is, you know, we don't know when this is going to end. We don't know if we're going to play this spring. And if that's the case, we better have a heck of a lot of fun this fall in our time together.
Fascinating that you bring up the aspect of your, what you see still as a player. You've continued your professional career. You've continued playing with the U.S. national team over the course of the last couple of years, as you've been the head coach at Jacksonville University. So how, I mean, not many people, I guess, get the opportunity to see it from a player's eyes while being a coach. What are some of the things that you've picked up here as of late while you've been watching things from the back end in goal?
Yeah, well, from a physical standpoint, you know, definitely, and maybe that's just because I'm in my 30s now, but it takes a toll on your body. So, you know, just recognizing what a post-game feels like, you know, getting out of bed, getting into the ice baths, the hydrotherapy. I think as you get older, you recognize all these little parts of your regimen are so important. And that might mean the film. You know, we spend an adequate amount of time watching film together and having conversations as players, not just with the coaches. The rehab is critical in a situation that we're in where we're going to play hopefully 7 games in 15 or 16 days. You have to recognize what lacrosse does to your body and how can you bounce back quickly. And for us, you know, we're always so used to the normalcy of, hey, let's practice every day and let's play and then let's practice. And, you know, there is a level of, you know, a concern about your body and your mind, you know, how much can you take throughout the entire spring and throughout a year. So I think as a player, you're just recognizing what it feels like, you know, on the other end and where you can maybe find some times to take a step back and make sure the bodies are healthy and the minds are fresh and then hit the ground running again. And I think that, you know, what we learned here, especially in the bubble, is, you know, quality over quantity. You know, we can't be out there. We had 2-a-days for training camp, and at some point that's not going to be sustainable. We have to have good hour 15-minute practices, great conversation in between sessions, authentic, prepared, but being able to feel fresh when we wake up out of bed in the morning. And that's something that is hard to you know, think about when you're a coach, and you can only emulate it as a player.
One of your former players, your former GAs, Hunter Forbes, playing on the team with you out there in Utah. What has that been like, that experience?
It's awesome. You know, obviously just to have another guy, you know, from our program out here and experiencing this and having Hunter be the guy is a perfect fit, because I do think he was a player that was overlooked in college. Unfortunately, you know, he was 3rd in the nation in faceoff percentage. He should have been given this opportunity a couple of years ago, but for him to be recognized now and him just to have the experience. And, you know, we have 2 great faceoff guys on our roster. He's going to have the opportunity to get some playing time. He did the other night. But for him just to be able to be out here is going to propel him for the next 4 years. And, you know, in this level, as a face-off guy, it's not easy to be given a chance. And I'm just glad he's has that opportunity. And I think he's thrived in it over the last 2 weeks.
Do you see your experience at the professional level ongoing now, having seen the various leagues and the opportunities continuing to grow for professional opportunities in lacrosse in this country? Do you use that as a selling point when you're trying to bring guys in to this Jacksonville lacrosse community?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the last 2 weeks, and I sent a note to our SID, Matt Moretti, and our director of ops, Danielle, and I, you know, just as we were starting to work on our social media promotions, you know, at one point we had four guys in our program playing professional lacrosse on the same day on ESPN and NBC Sports. And I mean, you could not have said that about lacrosse a few years ago. And I was fortunate enough to play at Syracuse. And, you know, if you compare it, it's, I think it's three guys that's from Syracuse in this league and two guys from Jacksonville. That's pretty damn good. I mean, I think that that's, you know, an opportunity for us to continue to promote the growth of our game in the South and the opportunity that you're going to have post-graduation. So not only Hunter and I here, but Ryan Bevel and Hayden Labangie and their experiences that they had in the MLL and what they did for their team, you know, to win three games in a row to make the playoffs. Obviously their league was unfortunately cut short by COVID, but man, what a chance for us as a program to, you know, step out of this shadow and say, hey, we're here and we're producing guys that can play at this level.
You touched on it a little bit earlier. Still so many unknowns with what things are going to look like over the course of the next several weeks, much less several months, as you all gear up for hopefully having a somewhat normal spring season. But can you take us inside some of the thought processes toward how you're hoping to maximize the opportunities with your players, regardless of what things look like as far as scheduling and playing and things of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, I have no doubt that our guys are going to come back with a sense of excitement that we've never seen before in the fall. So even if we are in groups of five or groups of 10, and it's mostly individual work in the fall, we're going to have this group of guys that is so thrilled to be playing the game again. And our roster is going to be bigger than ever before. It's going to be more competitive than it ever has been, I think, with the return of some of our seniors, the influx of some transfers and freshmen, and then just the competitive nature that we had in the middle of our classes. Guys are coming back hungry. They're hungry knowing that this is a team that, you know, we started to, you know, we started to try to figure out our identity in the middle of last spring. And as we were going, I think that, you know, this group of young, this batch of younger guys started to have a greater sense of expectation of the team. And if we can continue to, you know, transition that into our new guys, to our transfers, to our freshmen, and we can continue to create a competitive culture, our guys, even if we're just practicing, those scrimmages are going to be more heated than they ever have been before. And I do think when you have practice as difficult and as intense as a game, those things will translate into the spring. And we're obviously all hopeful for the spring, but we have to take this a day at a time and just go to battle together. And honestly, if we can be really proud of our efforts in the fall, regardless of what happens, this team will become a team. And that's our job in the fall. It's just to recreate that and figure out what the identity of this new group is and make it as competitive as possible.
Well, as we sit here and record this, you're in the midst of sort of the preliminary rounds. This will air and the playoffs will be starting on August 4th for the PLL out in Utah. Hopefully you guys are out there making a run with the Chrome and it'll be exciting to watch. NBC, NBC Sports, and NBC Gold. So much great, you know, you hate to see the fact that the Olympics aren't happening right now, but it's really opened up a great opportunity here for Paul Rabel, the PLL, and you all to get some unbelievable exposure here over the course of the next couple of weeks on some major broadcast networks. I mean, that's got to be exciting for the sport, one that you love and want to see grow, right?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, we have two games on tonight. It's Tuesday night in the middle of the summer. At no time before have we ever been on national TV. And to have two games on NBC Sports Network, there's been games on NBC Main. NBC Gold has all the games streaming. Again, MLL was on ESPN. Just to have the sport featured in this way, you're right. The Olympics not happening is obviously devastating, but what a smart move by our league to take advantage of those TV windows and to put lacrosse at the forefront of a lot of people's minds as sports return and to have it be a really good product. That's been really fun to watch as well. And it's a credit to all the guys that are in the bubble that have prepared to hopefully put lacrosse at a new level.
Well, Coach, best of luck to you and your team as you go forward and enjoy a life in the bubble, as weird as it may seem at times, and look forward to catching up with you soon.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
At DoubleTree, they're known for their delicious warm chocolate chip cookies, baked fresh daily. Their cookies represent their constant dedication to the guest experience and is a thoughtful touch that ensures you feel special and cared for throughout your stay. Book your stay today at DoubleTree by Hilton Jacksonville Riverfront, a proud partner of Jacksonville Athletics.
Your local Napa Auto Care Center is independently owned, operates by a written code of ethics, and provides service you can trust. Put your vehicle in the care of ASE-certified technicians in your neighborhood. They're backed by Napa. Quality parts, national warranties. That's Napa know-how. Your Napa Auto Care Center might just be the treated me fairly, I love those guys place you've been looking for your vehicle. Stop by today at
jacksnapa.com. Thank you for tuning in to episode 15 of the Dolphin Tales podcast presented by Baptist Health. And thank you to our guests here today. First, Dove Ribnick, JU men's soccer alum and producer of Nitro Circus. And then after that, head men's lacrosse coach John Galloway. This has been another episode of the Dolphin Tales podcast presented by Baptist Health. For my co-host Pat Sitkins, I'm Scott Manzi, saying so long, stay safe, and we look forward to the next time we can share these great Jacksonville University stories with you.